All right, here we are for Edge Show number 121. Today in the news, we have a kind of big announcement.
Yeah.
Windows 10.
Yeah, Windows 10 is available. In fact, actually, technically, it's the Windows 10 technical preview. So it is a preview. It's not the full thing here. Please do not go and run this inside of your full production environments at the moment. Please don't go and build this into your mission critical lab environment. Just use it to start to understand what Windows 10 is going to be about.
Absolutely. And here on the Edge Show, we want to give you IT folks out there a little bit of an idea of some of the top kind of highlights we think are important for IT pros. Now, there's a lot more than we have to cover here today in the news, but we'll give you some pointers on resources here. And first up, we have, you know, this the new user experience, right? So for organizations who have Windows 7 prevalent in their organization, mm-hmm. you'll notice there's quite a few enhancements here that really help make the user experience much more seamless from what folks are used to using on Windows 7.
Yeah, it's much more familiar for Windows 7 users. We've got the start button at the moment, which will appear to give you a start screen, start layout, start button style layout. Yeah. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, for folks who that like the start screen, like myself, you know, you can also go revert back to that if you
want. Yeah, completely. That's
set things via policy.
That's the thing. Yeah. I actually, on my, I've been running running Windows 10 for a little while, and I actually have the traditional, I guess, Windows 8 start screen as my main start screen, because I've just become used to it. So that's what I've turned on. Yeah. Really easy to just change that setting back and use the new old start layout.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other usability enhancements here. One of the other big ones, we don't have time to go through all of them here today. One of the other ones is the everything running inside of a window. So even, you know, having those Windows 8 mm-hmm. X apps here, you know, you can have those in a windowed styled format on the desktop if you so desired.
Yeah, those universal apps actually do kind of they become slightly more familiar to a Windows 7 user, I guess, when they're inside of a window. And you also get all of the advantages of what is a universal app on Windows now. So they run with across lots of different form factors. You have the single code that you can use everywhere. But also one of the things that I love about them is actually the way that they display and the dynamic way that they resize. Much, much different to a kind of traditional desktop application.
Yep.
Security, I guess, is
my
other
security,
big
yeah.
one. So, there's some big updates on security inside of the Windows 10 preview, and some more features are going to be coming along. We've basically looked at the way that the world works and thought a little bit differently about security. So, we now have the ability to containerize data, but also keep it controlled and secure once it moves outside of that. So, some really neat features inside of that that environment, which will be lit up over time. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the other one for me, I've done a whole lot in the past of work with you guys on app stores and how app stores work. Previously, you've needed an MDM solution in order to be able to have your own enterprise app store. We're going to make it possible to be able to have your own app store that runs inside of the Windows Store. And that means that you can curate apps from the normal public Windows Store. You can add your own side-loaded applications. It also means that we can deal with volume purchasing, which is something that people have been asking us for. So really kind of cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool. All right, definitely check out from that main blog post. We'll provide a link to it below. That links to this business post, which has a number of other larger features. And last but not least, you're going to see a notice of, how do I get the bits? How do I get the software?
Yeah.
And for that, this is the Windows Insider program is how you get access to that. If you click on that main link to the blog post, it's preview.windows.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And nice and easy.
And from there, you can go and just say, hey, click and get started. It'll ask you to sign in with a Microsoft ID. And from there, it's like two clicks. I literally signed up for it just now before we started this news interview. And after you're done, what you'll have is essentially... congrats! You're an insider.
Yeah.
There you go.
Woo-hoo.
You're an insider. And now that'll link you to the install technical preview, which is this page here. And from there, you can check the system requirements, download the ISO, and you're off and running.
Yep.
So fairly straightforward.
Yeah. So we do have an ask. The ask is for you guys to give it a try. Start kicking the tires. see if it runs, see how your line of business applications work with Windows 10 technical preview, and let us know the outcome. That's probably the most important bit. Let us know how things are working or not, so that we can actually work with you guys, partner with you in order to get this stuff fixed before we go into kind of the full release of the OS in the future.
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, if you look at the mechanism even now that we have with the automatic updates, where if you're opting into this program, you're going to be literally getting the latest bits of Windows delivered to you over the internet. And we're going to be delivering those changes and updates based on the feedback that you give us. So very great platform to provide feedback and see that in action.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool thing. So kind of takes us to the end of talking about Windows 10.
Yeah.
You did a technical interview a couple of days ago, which we're going to show now.
Yeah. So we're gonna link to the Azure Resource Manager and talk about that now. So stay tuned if you want to hear that. But definitely stay tuned on the Edge Show for a lot more of Windows 10 stuff.
Yeah.
And I think you will
be. I will be delivering a whole load more as soon as we have more details that we want to share. That's where you're going to be able to find them. You're going to be able to find some more information on the Edge Show.
Alrighty, well, stay tuned for the interview. All right, welcome to the Edge Show. And today I am joined by Kevin Lamb, and we are going to talk about a very important technology, especially in the DevOps/Azure world, which is Azure Resource Manager. So Kevin, what is your role here at Microsoft?
I'm a principal program manager in the Azure Resource Manager group. We're responsible for building and deploying the new Azure Resource Manager.
Okay. Let's dig in. I know for folks, there's a lot of things underneath that umbrella of Azure Resource Manager. So what are some of the things that Azure Resource Manager does?
So one of the things that we've introduced with the Azure Resource Manager is the concept of resource groups. Resource groups acts as a container for all of your resources that you've deployed to Azure. One of the reasons that we've created these resource groups is for a container of management of your resources, for the ability to add authorization to allow people to access certain resources within those groups, as well as being able to manage lifetime and lifecycle of all those resources in that group.
Yeah, I know in the old portal it's like VMs, and then you get a whole slew of a list of them, and then you know if you want to have an app that comprises of a number of those, you got to click around a lot of places.
That's right.
So this will be a nice.
So now you can logically order all those all those resources in either an application or as a tier, or any way that you'd like.
Okay. Well, that's resource groups is one aspect. What else is a part of Azure Resource Management?
The other key aspect that we've created is a consistent Azure Management API and surface area. So every client that we have integrates with the Azure Resource Manager in the same way. So our portal, our command PowerShell commandlets, CLI, everything interacts in the same way. So there's no secret backdoors or ways that you can access the resource manager. And with that consistent REST API, we also have a consistent way of accessing all the resource providers that provide those resources to Azure, so that we have a great way to plug in our first-party resources as well as 30-party resources like MySQL.
Okay. So to clarify for folks who might not know, provider endpoints, what would that be?
Sure. A resource provider endpoint is the service in the back of Azure that's actually supplying the resource to the customer. For example, the SQL Server resource provider will supply SQL servers and SQL databases. The website resource provider will provide websites.
Yeah, so essentially, at eventually, right, all of the resources inside of Azure would be under this new model. Right?
That's right. And because we have a common way of managing all of your resources, we also manage all of the role-based access control to all those resources through that management plane.
Okay.
So that's where you see the connection to AD.
AD and ADFS. Okay, cool. And then last but maybe not least, what else do we have?
One of the really key features that we've added to the Azure Resource Manager is the idea of deployment templates. So you can declaratively describe the deployment that you want to push out there, which describes all of the properties and aspects of your resources, and put it into a single file that you can go check in, check out, modify, and deploy from PowerShell or from the different tools like Visual Studio.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, this would be the industry term infrastructure as code and configuration as code, because you're
That's
really
right.
defining that template that is the infrastructure and configuration of that infrastructure all in code, right? So that's pretty cool stuff.
It's actually important. Even better because it's not code. It's actually all declarative JSON.
Okay.
So it's very readable, and anybody can go and modify it.
Okay, well, why don't we see that? Why don't we see that
in action?
Okay,
let's do that. So the first thing I'm going to do is open my PowerShell. And with every, if you've seen the gallery that's in the portal, and we'll go actually look at that later, you'll notice all the resources that you can deploy in Azure. And behind those gallery items are templates. Every gallery item is backed by a template. So what I'm going to do is go and get Azure Resource Group Deployment Gallery Templates. Okay. So with this PowerShell commandlet, it will get me all of the templates that are associated with gallery items in Azure.
Okay.
So if I go run that, one of the things that you'll see is that there are a lot of these templates that are actually deployed up in Azure. And each one of these represents different sets of resources that you can deploy. There's a lot, obviously, here for VMs. And so we both support IaaS and PaaS sources. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to select one of these. The website, and I'm going to go ahead and
save it.
So now I'm going to go and open this in Visual Studio. So what you see here is the template that I just downloaded from the Azure Gallery. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through some of this. What it's really trying to do is deploy a website to Azure.
Okay, so then there in this basic template, right, we're going to get just the infrastructure, or are we going to get the full-blown app installed on?
You'll just get the infrastructure. So right now it doesn't know about the app that you want to deploy. It just knows that you want a website up in Azure.
Okay.
And so this will actually create a vanilla website with the default start screen for your website.
Okay, so and if I wanted to use PowerShell to deploy that basic template, you could do that as well.
Exactly.
But is there a way to add a template that configures the application as well?
Yes. What I have here is I have another template that's already been created that essentially does the same thing. It's going to deploy a website. It's actually going to deploy an associated SQL database in a new SQL server. And it's going to do a web deploy of my Fabricam website.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's dig in and see kind of what that looks like in the code there.
Okay. So let's look at the different parts in a template. The first part is critical in DevOps scenarios, and that's the parameter section. The parameter section is your input to the template file, and this allows you to use the same template over and over again with different settings so that you can deploy it to different environments or for different purposes.
Okay.
So in this case, we have a number of parameters like the website, the hosting plan name, and website location, et cetera, and these will be used as input later on in the template.
Okay.
So the next section we have is a set of resources. In here, the first thing that we see is a SQL server. And so one of the great things that we've done with the template language is that we provided some expressions to help you better express what you want to deploy in your template. So in here, this is how we actually reference a parameter in the template file.
Okay.
So and as we continue, so the first thing we're going to do is deploy a server. As a child of that SQL server, we will deploy a database. Again, it's using all the references from the parameter files, from the parameters to go and figure out what are the properties for that SQL database. And then as a child of that database, we have a set of IP addresses. So this is the firewall settings for that SQL server.
Yeah, so right there, that firewall setting would be an example of a configuration as I call it code, just because it's the industry term.
Yes.
I know it's JSON, but right there, you're setting the configuration of that SQL server database. You're setting a firewall rule just with a simple command.
Ideally, you should be able to, after you've done your deployment, all the settings that you want are set on those resources. You shouldn't have to deploy, and then after the fact, go create more PowerShell script or manually go ahead and tweak all the things that you've deployed.
Yep.
Every time it deploys, it should be set up in the configuration that you'd like.
Yeah, and this is really huge, right, for DevOps scenarios where you want a very quick deployment and a fast flow where you have your environment this in test or dev or staging is exactly the same, right there, you have it,
yes,
right?
And this ensures consistency across each deployment.
Okay, very cool. So maybe we can just take a quick look at the parameters file just to kind of have a rough idea of what that consists of.
So I've showed you the parameters at the top of this file. You can either put those parameters in manually or create a file that presets those for you. And then you can have different files with different settings, so you can actually check those in as well.
Okay. So you could have just the switches for PowerShell command to deploy that, or you can just have this parameters file to say use all those settings.
Exactly.
Okay. So could we see what a deployment looks like with this app?
Absolutely. So let's go back to PowerShell and go ahead and try to deploy this. So we'll say new Azure resource group. I'm going to give it a name, and I'll call it Edge Demo. I'm going to give it a location. So this location is where the resource group will live, and that's where the deployment will happen mm-hmm. from. But the resource group allows you to have both heterogeneous resources within it, as well as deploy resources into different locations around the world. Mm-hmm. So you're not constrained by the location of the resource group. Let's reference the template file. Here's the template file, so the Fabricam template file. And the parameter file.
Okay.
And let's do a verbose. I think I got all my parameters.
I think so.
So what this is going to do is go ahead and create a new resource group called Edge Demo in WestUS using the template file, the Fabricam template, with the preset parameters that are defined in the parameter file.
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
So let's hit go. So now it's going to go ahead and create all these resources up in Azure. And because this is creating both a SQL Server and a SQL database and websites, and it's actually going to do a web deploy of my Fabricam website, this will take a few minutes to execute. The thing that takes probably the most is creating a new SQL Server, because it's going to create a domain name and things like
right.
that. But it'll take care of all this for you in the background.
Yeah, changing autofill settings. So one of the questions might be for folks thinking about this is, well, maybe I've already got existing investments in the cross-plat CLI to provision to Azure, or maybe Chef or Puppet, or just basic PowerShell, or even Windows Azure Markup Language. So what would be the reasoning why I might kind of shift to this model?
Well, because this is a new declarative model, so it provides a consistent way for describing your resources. But it actually also performs well in our new Azure portal. And one of the benefits that you get to see is the fact that we have this notion of resource groups as a first class item in the portal. If I go ahead and browse my resource groups, I created this new resource group called Edge Demo. And in this Edge Demo resource group, now I can see all of my resources deployed together in a single place, as well as get information about an aggregation of all those resources. For example, I would get monitoring data about all those resources. I would be able to get billing information about all those resources, all contained in this one view in the resource blade.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have alert rules, right? I noticed that you were firing
Absolutely.
Off in the configuration. You can fire off alerts or different settings for that template that you're deploying all right there.
In that template deployment file, we actually described all the alert rules and autoscale settings as part of the deployment. So I don't have to come here after the fact and set that stuff up.
So right there, it looks like it succeeded on the left-hand side, your deployment.
Yeah.
Looks like that's succeeded. And maybe we can see what that looks like in the PowerShell window as well.
Sure. Here we go. So it gives you a little summary about what it actually deployed.
We've deployed all of the infrastructure, all of the resources, and the configuration of those resources all within a number of minutes here.
That's right. All these resources were deployed, as well as that website. So let's actually go look at that website. So here in that resource group, we have a reference to the website that's in that resource group. Click on that website, and then we can go ahead and browse to that website. And we can see that website is up and running.
Wow. Right, yeah, and so time-wise, what are we talking here? Like 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and we've deployed a website, a SQL database, configured all of the settings, set up alerts, and deployed the application.
In the old world, all this stuff would have been done sequentially. So you'd have to understand the order of the things that have to be deployed. deploy it, wait till it succeeds, and then go on to the next item to deploy. Now in the new Azure Resource Manager, with the template, it understands all the dependencies between your resources and will optimize the deployment of those different resources. So if there's a dependency on a SQL Server, the template execution engine will deploy the SQL Server first and then deploy all the other resources in parallel that had a dependency on that.
Okay, so I think you're kind of hinting at this notion of the declarative nature. So you say, I want this infrastructure to be there, it's going to make it so, even
That's
if
right.
it's got a retry or
That's right.
make
if you notice in that template in the JSON file, there was no explicit ordering provided. The execution engine was smart enough to infer all the references that you had in that template and create the order for you.
Wow, so you're really getting probably even a faster deployment time. And then you're getting insurance of some type, more than just a PowerShell-based PowerShell, of that this is going to be created because I said I wanted it to be that way.
That's right. Okay. And it's because it's consistent, you'll deploy this every time, it will always have the same side effect.
Okay, very cool. All right. Well, now one of the new features I know we have is this thing called role-based access control.
Yes.
Right? So what if now after I've deployed this, I only want to give certain people access to, let's say, that resource or that resource group? What would that look like?
So if you noticed in the resource group layer that we had for that new resource group we created, at the very bottom here, we have a new part called access. So I want to be able to give a person access just to this resource group, but none of my other resource groups. You know, this is a very typical scenario in an enterprise where you want to have operators work on certain aspects or certain applications, mm-hmm. but not have access to your full subscription
right.
and those resources. So let me go ahead and add somebody. So here there's nobody currently added as a contributor, so I'm going to add a user. So I have a user called Bob. He's going to get access as a contributor to this resource group and only this resource group.
Okay.
So now that's completed. And we see that we have one more contributor on this resource group. So now I'll go and browse and look at what Bob's view is. So here I'm logged in as Bob. Let me refresh to make sure everything is recaptured. Bob doesn't have any access to any of my other resources in my subscription. So when we go ahead and browse his resource groups, he will only see that Edge demo that I actually just gave him permission to. But because I think of him as an operator or manager of that resource group, he can actually go ahead and do things like add resources or modify resources within it. Because RBAC works hierarchically, since I gave him permission to the resource group, he has permission to all the child resources within it. And I only had to do that with two clicks.
Bob Bobber is all set to go now.
Bob Bobber is ready to go.
ready
he now has permissions to my
to
resource group.
There you go. okay, that's awesome. All right, well, there's definitely a lot more I know to cover here. And if you haven't registered yet, we have a Azure Resource Manager Jumpstart, you and I, that will take us over a course of 4 hours or so to really go more in depth. So you definitely want to check that out. If you are before October 9th, then you can watch it. If you're after that watching this video, then you hopefully soon or now you can go and watch the recorded course of that. So
this was just a teaser.
That's right. All right. Thanks so much, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thank you.